So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Gary Ambrosino, president of Time Trade. Hi, Gary.
How are you?
I'm very well, sir. How are you getting
Good
on?
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Very well, thanks.
So, Gary, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a bit about you and a bit about the work that you do?
Well, I've been, I'm kind of a self-professed high-tech change agent junkie, and I've been fortunate enough to be in the technology business for a long time in the startup environment. I've been most interested in working in on projects and focusing on technologies that will change kind of everyday life. So in the past, I've had the opportunity to work on some technology that is we invented to be the basis of digital copiers and MFPs, and fortunately through Hewlett-Packard, they're now in every MFP and printer device in the world. And just prior to Time Trade, I worked on a project that focused in the Wi-Fi area, and we were able to touch people's lives by making Wi-Fi work a lot better for them, devices. And I think I'm most excited now about Time Trade because we're just on very beginning and on the verge of changing the way people shop and really improving that kind of experience for everyday life for folks.
Cool. Well, I mean, that's great. Now, so we were talking earlier, and you mentioned that you were working with a number of top banks in the US, as you alluded to there, to help them redefine some of their customer service strategy. But that's really been in response to a changing customer landscape. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you're doing, how you're helping them, and how it's impacting their business?
You know, I think the biggest challenge for U.S. banks is creating brand loyalty. And, you know, there's been some very interesting studies done that show that a lot of people have multiple bank accounts in multiple banks, and that, their identity between themselves and a bank brand is kind of weak. And banks understand this, and what they're interested in doing is personalizing their relationship with the customer a lot more. And I think we all know that the bank branch experience can sometimes be a little frustrating. You know, if you walk into a bank at lunch, there's a fairly chaotic situation with a lot of people walk in, and then oftentimes it's a challenge to try to get the right person to the bank to help you with the right, you know, with a particular problem. Mm-hmm. And I think banks, they understand this dynamic and they see it as a big opportunity. So we're helping them capitalize on that.
Can you tell me a little bit, like a bit more? Because, I mean, you were also talking about earlier, you were also talking about this idea that everyone can now create a genius bar. I mean, but before we kind of go, because I think that's linked to what you're doing, but can you go back and tell me a little bit more about sort of Time Trade and what Time Trade is doing specifically, the sort of some of the technology that you're developing?
Well, I think the easiest way to describe what we do, and you mentioned the genius bar, so the easiest way to describe what we do is we create a software technology platform and sell it that is the genius bar for everyone else. So in other words, we have a tremendous amount of respect for Apple, and I think they've tempered the public to this genius bar experience where people understand that they can make an appointment and go to an Apple store and get very specific help and help on exactly the thing they need. Now, Apple, of course, doesn't sell this. It's part of their retail offering, and people identify with it and like it very much. So as an independent software company, we create a SaaS platform that retail banks, consumer retail plays, retail healthcare providers can actually deliver this genius bar experience, which includes having the customer be able to make an appointment to go in or maybe talk on the phone or get some sort of online video conference-based help. And the secret sauce to it is really making sure that when that dialogue takes place or that meeting takes place, that it takes place between the customer and exactly the right person So if they're going into the bank and they're interested in a home mortgage, they're able to talk to the home mortgage person. And so that's what we help our customers deliver, that equation.
So it's not just about I'm just thinking kind of out loud here. So it's almost like trying to map the right sort of resource allocation to a customer's request. So it's not just about making an appointment, but it's making sure you, as you say, make sure you get an appointment with the right person at the right time.
Exactly. And we've done a lot of research on this. We just completed a consumer survey to 1,000 consumers, and we've over and over, as we've done these surveys, measured this element of what we call personalized customer experience. And when we survey consumers and say, tell us about what you think a great personalized experience is, they of course talk about the appointment, because that at least guarantees they'll get undivided attention, which, you know, back to your first question on banks, it's hard to walk into a bank when it's overcrowded and get what you feel like is undivided attention from somebody. So that's a part of it. But the other element, as we survey people, is they talk about getting the right type of help.
Right.
And that oftentimes it depends on making sure when they do walk into the store or the bank branch or the retail health provider, that they're matched up with the person that has the expertise that can actually help them with the problem that they have. Or what they're trying to buy, or maybe understand a little bit more about some of the options. And that's as important to the equation as the idea of just making an appointment.
Okay. Now, I mean, so some of the banks that you've worked with, I mean, what sort of benefits have they seen from adopting this type of approach?
Well, one of the things they measure is the conversion. So banks, you know, why is a bank a retail store? Banks today really view their branches, and they'll call them retail outlets, and they're interested in selling more products to their customers. So you may have a checking account, but they may want your business for a car loan. So it really is a sales process, and what banks have been able to measure is the conversion of a customer interest in the form of coming into the branch for a visit, the conversion of that into the purchase of a product. And they find that this, when they are face to face with somebody and they have the right person talking to their customer, the conversion rate to get the customer to actually sign up is very, very high. So they've seen results on the order of, you know, 60 or 70% of the people that are coming in on these prearranged appointments are actually converting to a sale, which is much, much higher than that what they've measured for folks just kind of wandering into a branch and trying to get the right kind of help.
And is this, do you think that this is also, because they're adopting this approach, is it also helping them differentiate themselves in the market as well, just from a general service perspective?
It's clearly a competitive strategy. You know, we have four of the top 20 banks in the United States, and you know, our claims scheduling service is available in 10,000 bank branches in the United States. There are 7,800 banks in the United States, and I think especially the mid-market banks are seeing the leaders do this, and it's becoming a competitive strategy. And they've measured changes. The bank customers we work with, the executive teams we work with, have measured changes in brand preference based on the availability of this Genius Bar style interaction.
Excellent. Now, I mean, excuse me, do you think this type of approach, this type of appointment setting, particularly when you're in a retail type of space, let's say a broader retail space, do you think it could apply across the board, or does it have limited application, do you think?
No, I actually think it applies across the board. And when we started out, I was telling you about my interest in sort of changing the way things happen, using technology to change the way things happen. And the perspective that we have is that this is very fundamental to the way all retailing is beginning to change and will change over the next 2 to 5 years. And the fundamental change here is that I think we used to view this as folks would come in and be shoppers and wander into a bank branch or a retail store and shop around to see what they need. What's very different now is that all the surveys that have been done are showing that between 70 and 80% of the purchase process in the mind of a consumer is completed out of sight of the brand or the retailer, and it's completed before they even walk in. So the fundamental change is, you know, I think we're going to witness over the next few years the death of the shopper.
Right.
And it's going to be by the creation of the buyer, because really most people are walking into a retail store to buy something. They've already very familiar with products. They search social media and they get others' opinions on the products. They can do comparative shopping on the web. And the last, very last part of that process is getting that personal interaction and that validation on their purchase decision. And that happens through an interpersonal interaction. And that's a buying experience, not a shopping experience. Fundamentally changes in retailing.
And how does that square with the idea of, because there's a big phenomenon in general retailing right now, particularly bricks and mortar retailing, called showrooming. I mean, I know we touched on that a little bit earlier as well prior to this call. I mean, do you think it has an opportunity? What you're trying to help companies do? Do you think that has you have an opportunity to try and reduce the showrooming effect as well?
Yes, definitely. And I think there's a great misnomer around what showrooming now is. And that is, I think there's a perception that showrooming is caused by price or availability. And if you look now at the major retailers, and certainly in the banking industry, things are available electronically online. The availability of product is kind of a level playing field. If you walk into a consumer electronics retailer and they don't have the product on the shelf, they're probably going to get it to you the next day. If you walk into a soft goods, a clothing retailer, some of the folks we work with, if they don't have the exact item in the store, it'll be on its way to your house very quickly. Most of the retailers are willing to price match with the web, so it's leveled the playing field on pricing. And now with the Internet Taxation Act, the taxes are starting to be applied. So you don't have an availability issue anymore. This is kind of a level a playing field. But in our survey, we found out something very fundamental. And we found out that 84% of the people that walk into a retail environment, be it a bank or a retail store or even a retail health provider, 84% of those people, if they don't get the help that they need when they walk in, they leave.
Yeah.
And they leave without buying a product. We've also measured sort of this in the same range, in the 80th percentile range, if they do get the help they need, they, you know, A, are very predisposed to buy something, and B, usually are going to spend more than they would otherwise online. And so this is what we think showrooming is now. It's the what makes the difference, and what creates showrooming is the lack of personalized attention. If a brand or a retailer gives the personalized attention, they combat showrooming.
Right. Okay. And does this type of drill down a little bit on that type of behavior? Because I mean, the idea of showrooming kind of makes me think about my wife isn't a big shopper, but my sister and my mum are. They're like national athletes when it comes to shopping. And I'm pretty sure that sort of behavior isn't necessarily going to go away, because for some people shopping is a bit like a pastime or a sport of theirs. So is it that what you're talking about, is it only apply to almost like a certain type of demographic and a certain type of person and product that they're looking for? Or is it, you know, what's going on here?
I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think people are, the reason why the malls, I don't know about where you live, but I know where we live here in the Boston area, it's very hard to find a shopping or a parking spot at a mall.
Okay.
Especially, you know, there's a tremendous amount of interest about going out and having, you know, this non-online experience. So I don't think that changes. What does change, though, there's another dimension to this, which is something we're doing with consumer retailers, especially now, which is do a more structured interaction. And what I mean by that is now, say folks will go out to on the kind of shopping, committed shopping expedition that you're talking about, and they'll want to see three or four different things in the course of going shopping. Maybe they want to go do some cosmetic shopping. They want to do some shopping for clothing. And also maybe while they're at the mall, they want to go over to the bank and while they're there, get their portrait taken at a portrait studio. So that's kind of they're going to interact with a lot of brands and a lot of retailers. But again, what's going to happen there, what we're starting to see happen with some of the customers we're working with that have multiple brands in store, a store in a store, that even those vignettes of moving through a store and maybe going and seeing the Samsung cell phone store in a store, and then going over to the Apple store in a store, and then going over to the Magnolia Stereo brand store in a store. This sort of Genius Bar experience can be extended to, you know, multiple brands. So your shopping day might be the same 3 hours in the mall, although you're probably going to be able to structure a series of interactions that are going to be very, very high value. So I think the byproduct of this is that shopping expedition becomes even more satisfying because you're going to get a little bit more personalized service than you might otherwise.
Okay. I mean, I think it might be slightly different to some of the if you like, the urban shopping experiences that we have in the UK. I think because our retail, the dynamics of our retail industries are slightly different, and ours are more less mall-based and less out-of-town sort of mall-based, as it were, and more sort of high street, urban high street sort of based. So people tend to go into town and then wander around. But I think it's... I think it's interesting because there is also dimensions around out of town retail parks, and that I understand the dimension around parking there because my mum and my sister tell me about it as well. I personally don't have much interest in doing that, but I find it interesting when they tell me about it and tell me about the sort of the whole experience of it all.
Well, I think there's also something. There's another trend. And this is a little bit more on the technology side now of how this all happens. Let's say we're in a downtown. Let's say we're downtown Manhattan or downtown London, and we're shopping. We're not in a mall environment. We're shopping at individual stores.
Yeah.
And in particular for the younger generation, which is a very next moment oriented kind of generation, so everything's being done on the mobile phone, and you know, plans are being made with very short, you know, planning horizons. And I know my kids, teenagers, you know, they seem to want to plan on about 5 minutes of notice.
Right.
Not, you know, so the concept of making an appointment for tomorrow is probably a little bit farther out by their range of thinking. So we are applying the technology of time trade in this area as well. And there is the concept of next moment planning for shopping. So, you know, when I talk about appointment scheduling, there is also the idea that I'm in downtown London and I'm heading to Harrods and I want to go into the men's department and look at some suits, and I might be 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
So where technology comes into play. So now your experience is going to be you're going to punch up the Harrods site and you're going to punch up the men's department and you're going to see what the wait time is to get waited on, and you're going to, on your mobile phone, put yourself into the queue,
right?
So that when you get to the see your name up on a screen and you'll understand in 7 minutes after coming to the men's bar that there'll be somebody available to wait on you. A little bit more queue management oriented, but definitely it's something we include and our customers definitely include in their thinking of the shopping experience. And so, for example, in the U.S., my trade services, the Sprint mobile phone stores, 3,000 of them across the U.S., about 60% of the people that get waited on in those stores are entering you when they walk into the store. And if they pass by the store in a mall, they'll punch up a QR code on their phone, put their name on the queue, and they'll know exactly when they're going to be waited on. And so it really is kind of a next moment shopping experience. But so it has the benefit of being, you know, very, you know, in the moment. But at the same time, it has benefit of the retailers now able to then deliver this very same kind of personalized experience. And this is where technology comes into play. And, the next step, for Time Trade and our customers is that you may not be punching through an application on your phone. You'll probably just be talking to Siri and saying, I'm heading over to Harrods. I need some help in the men's department. And Siri's going to talk back and say, Mr. Smith will be available in 10 minutes and is expecting to see you then.
Well, I mean,
and that's a revolution.
Yeah, no, that sounds interesting and very much kind of very futuristic, I must say. And it's not surprising that the technology's there. I'm just kind of imagining kind of a future retail sort of retail environment, which is how that would help people. And effectively, if I think about it from a personal perspective, it's you're effectively saying you don't have to queue. You just basically you put yourself in the front of the queue. We'll just tell you when your place is up, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It really is that kind of a queuing model. And in that area, when people ask us what does Time Trade deliver, what does Time Trade technology do for the retailer in that kind of setting? And the thing that keeps coming back as a theme is a lot of retailers just want to reduce the chaos.
Yeah,
in the store, in the lot. If you can do queuing management and match up, you're greatly reducing the kiosk. And then whenever we've measured this in our surveying, we find out that the if there's a high chaos level in a retail setting, the frustration level of the shopper goes way up. So anything you can do to reduce that really is a benefit.
That's brilliant. Gary, that's been fascinating, and I'll tell you what, I look forward to hearing a bit more about kind of those, well, your developments and sort of how you get on with it, all that, and we'll look forward to tracking your progress with great sort of interest. But in the interest of time and just trying to wrap up and things, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we start to wrap up?
I think the thing that we've noticed is that we're really at the beginning of a trend, which makes this so interesting. I think retailing over the next 3 to 5 years, we're so excited about how everything's going to change and improve. And it really is a great area, A, for technical innovation, but B, that it's a place where technology is really going to improve the experience of shoppers. And we know this from talking and knowing the plans of our customers in the industry and the retail industry, that there's a lot to come over the next few years, and it's going to be terrific for the general shopping public.
Fantastic. So, Gary, also that now I always end my interviews with this one final question, and it's this. Is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Well, sure. I mean, we have a fundamental belief in our company that the Apple Genius Bar experience is really going to be important to every single retail brand, consumer retail brand, and banking brand in the world. And we do a great job delivering that experience because we've had 10 years of experience working with retailers We interacted with 45 million consumers last year on our platform, and everything we've learned about what those consumers are really interested in having as an experience, we've been able to build into our technology, and then we can deliver it in a very scalable way. And we're really excited about that, because that gives us a real shot at making a pretty fundamental change to this really exciting industry.
Gary, that's fantastic. I mean, that's really interesting, and I look forward to that, because it's a big challenge, and it's for retailers how they start to differentiate themselves and how they can create some of this kind of personal service and reduce some of the frustrations that some of their customers kind of feel. So I think what you're doing is exciting. So I will watch with great interest. But thank you for your time today. That's been really good.
Yeah. Very much. It's great to be here.